This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Hopefully everybody's having a phenomenal day. A lot of great games last night, a lot of interesting storylines as we get deeper and deeper into this first round. Let's start from the beginning. Leafs take a 2-1 series lead on Boston, courtesy of their 3-2 win over Toronto. And the guy that's really emerging as a star, we saw during the course of the regular season, has really been the play of Mitch Marner, and just what a difference maker he can be as a player. He's just so well-rounded. He blocks shots, he assists, he scores. So you can look at Matthews, you can look at Janssen and what they did offensively, and certainly that was big. But Mitch Marner is just such an important player to this team, and that's really how you know you're a good playoff team that can go far. You've got your stars, and Marner is emerging as a flat-out star. But even when, you know, Nylander doesn't give you much, he didn't score a point in this game. Marlowe, nothing. Kapanen was a minus one, no points. Matthews did have 2 points, including the goal for sure. But Tavares had just an assist, no goals. But Marner gets a point. He had 2 hits in the game, 5 shots on goal, which led the team. He had the big block shot late in the game when they were in the Maple Leafs were trying to protect the lead. Just a great, great effort by Toronto. And they're up 2-1. And they deserve to be up 2-1 based on the fact that they bounced back after the game 2 loss. Boston bounced back after the game 1 loss. But where's the consistency with the Bruins right now? I mean, really, when you look at this team, you know, they've become more of like a one-line team. Stop the one line, and you're in great shape. Pasternak, they're trying to feed him the puck. Did have 3 shots on goal, but no points in the game, which is a problem. Bergeron, no points in the game last night. Marchand, no points in the game. So really, Toronto's been able to focus on the big three, shut them down for the most part. But when I watch the three games, and you guys can tell me at Don LaGreca and hashtag game misconduct, I don't think Boston's played their best by any stretch. I mean, I don't look at the series and go, well, Toronto is just so much a better team, because they're not. You know, Anderson made some big saves, obviously down the stretch when it looked like Boston was going to tie the game. But for the most part, Boston's just played inconsistent. They got to wake up here. They really do. And maybe they will, and they'll eventually win the series in 6 games, and nobody's going to think twice about it. But you thought they recovered after the game 1 loss. They played a much better game, thoroughly beat Toronto, and then you turn around, and again, the effort's not quite the same. They almost still win the game 3-2. I mean, that's what would be disconcerting for me if I'm a Leaf fan, is that you're really not getting Boston's best, but you're not killing them either, right? So Boston plays a little bit better, plays more to the back of their hockey card. I think they're still winning this series, but still, you're down 2-1. You're 1 loss away from facing elimination. You're playing around with this team, and you better be careful, because Toronto's always played a little bit better on the road than at home. So even if you get the victory in Toronto in Game 4, that doesn't guarantee anything. I still think Boston's going to win this series. I wouldn't panic based just on the fact that I think Boston can bring a little bit more to the table. So Game 1 wasn't a wake-up call. We'll see if Game 3 is, and see if they can't even the series up at 2. The other story, Hurricane shut out the Capitals 5-0. First time in 7 years the Capitals were shut out in the playoffs, and they were not shut out at all last year in the postseason. And the thing with the Hurricanes is that you knew they were going to push back at home. They are a team that's played very well on home ice, and I didn't think they were going to go away. They lose Game 2 in overtime. They fought back from 3-0 down to make it 3-2 in Game 1, and they get home, and that little bit of an advantage was a big help. But, you know, the big thing is Svechnikov fighting Ovechkin, which probably isn't the smartest thing to do, and he got it right in the chin, gets knocked out. But look how the team was inspired. I think they were outshot 30-8 the rest of the way after the fight, because a 19-year-old's going after one of the best players in the NHL, even though he got knocked on his fanny. The fact is that he did it. He defended his teammates. I guess Ovechkin got into it with Slavin a little bit earlier on in the game. That kind of got everybody going in the right direction as far as the physicality was concerned. But the fact that even though he didn't push back by getting knocked out, the fact that he went and danced with the best in the league, and that must have been tough for Svechnikov to do. Ovechkin felt bad about it after the game that he knocked him out. Everybody did what they had to do, but for a 19-year-old to do that, going up against an icon, I think really spurred the Hurricanes on the rest of the way. And really, the third period was flat out disturbing when you consider the fact that for the majority of the third period, the Capitals didn't even get a shot on goal which is ridiculous, and the secondary and tertiary scoring is huge. No Aho, no Teravainen. Who is it? It's Fogle. It's Hamilton. That's when you know you're going to be winning some playoff games. McGinn had a great goal, too, in this game. So you get four, you get five goals on the night, but you don't get a stall goal. You don't get a Svechnikov goal, obviously, because he got punched in the face. So it wasn't like you were carried by your superstars, but the secondary scoring, the tertiary scoring, that's what's going to really help the Hurricanes beat the Washington Capitals. So that was pretty big. So a nice win for Carolina. And also, they went up to the blue line. You kind of thought maybe they're going to charge towards the wall to the glass and do that celebration. We were kind of thinking, how would they handle their first playoff win in 10 years? And would they do the things that they did, the histrionics that we saw in the regular season? They didn't do that because I don't think there's a place for it in the postseason just because you got to play the same team again. You're down 2-1 in the series, so it wasn't like you really accomplished anything. Maybe they'll do it after they win the series if they shake hands with the Capitals. And they move on to the second round. The Capitals go back to the dressing room if they want to celebrate in that way. It's just awkward to do it within the confines of the series. So I was curious to see what the Hurricanes would do. I actually stayed with the game to see, and the Hurricanes celebrated just as any normal team would. Went to the blue line, raised their sticks to the fans, and that was probably the right thing to do. I think Washington is fine, but it was a huge statement by Carolina for sure. We'll see what happens in game four back in Raleigh. Predators, a 3-2 win over the Dallas Stars. The big moment in this game was Pekka Rinne and a huge save on Jamie Benn late when it looked like that was going to be the Stars' game-winning goal. It was tied at 2. Stars fight back to tie it after the Predators had scored the first two goals of the game. And it looked like they were in solid control in this game 3. And again, we talk about getting scoring from somebody other than your top line. Grimaldi gets his second of the postseason. It was huge. Forsberg lights the lamp. He, of course, a frontline player, so you kind of get it both ways there. But a huge goal by Zuccarello late in period number 2, I thought was huge. Sagan comes back to tie it midway through the third period. And then came the Rinne save on Ben, where it looked like the Stars were going to take the 3-2 lead, but instead Grantland, he scores just a few minutes after that, gives the Nashville Predators the lead 3-2, and they hold on. And really, it's come down to Rinne playing better than Bishop. I thought it was going to go the other way. I thought Bishop would be better. The Grimaldi goal was a terrible goal by Bishop. He just misplayed it. Really shouldn't have ever happened. And that was killer, considering it was such a low-scoring game, 3-2. Maybe if he could have had that back, the game changes quite a bit. But Rinne outplaying Ben, playing Bishop, and I think that's been the big difference in this series so far. Still, the Predators only up 2-1. Dallas still could be heard from, win the home game, and then you go back to a best of three. With Nashville having home ice advantage, but Nashville has never really played great at home, so I still think the Stars are very much alive. What do the Flames do? They lose to the Avalanche 6-2. And Colorado's up 2-1, and what a change in fortunes, right? Flames win the first game of the series. They've got a one-goal lead with less than 3 minutes to play in game 2. So the Flames are that close to winning the first two games at home, taking a 2-0 series lead to Colorado. They give up the late goal, lose in overtime. Now the series is tied at 1, and they get crushed in Colorado. So they're just this close to having a 2-0 series lead. Now they're down 2-1 in the series. That's just playoff hockey for you. But when I ask what do the Flames do? It's so easy to look at it and say, well, they got to change the goaltender, right? Riddick split time with Smith during the course of the year. There was legitimate questions on whether Smith should have been the starting goaltender for the Flames. So this would be the perfect opportunity after getting crushed 6-2, being down 2-1 in the series, to go to Riddick. I say no, because I look at the first three games of the series. I don't fault Smith. He was outstanding in game 1. He faced 56 shots last night. He made 50 saves. 50. There's nothing wrong with the goaltending. It's the play in front of them. I mean, this is supposed to be a solid defensive team, Calgary. You give up 56 shots? That's ridiculous. And if you look at the goals, what is Smith supposed to do? I mean, McKinnon was on fire. Makar goes right off of UMass within a whisker of winning a national championship. Wins the Hobie Baker Award. Plops in his first ever playoff game. First ever game in the NHL. He scores a goal to make it 3-0. It's 4-0 in the second period. And I don't think any of the goals were necessarily Smith's fault. So the knee-jerk reaction to go to Riddick, and maybe that's what the Flames do, but I'd say stay with Smith. He's been the best part of the Flames game so far in these playoffs. He really has. You're telling me Riddick would have saved the day yesterday when he's going to have to face 56 shots? No way. And how about this for a disturbing stat? Flames won 61% of the faceoffs, but they could control the puck. Flames had more hits. But you know what? The Avalanche finish. MacKinnon's just a flat-out star. He was just been sick. And of course, taking dumb penalties. 8 power plays for the Avalanche. Ridiculous. Ridiculous to blame Smith. When your team's committing 8 penalties, where are the stars scoring some goals here? Gaudreau shut down again. He was a -3. So the knee jerk could be go with Riddick, and maybe that's what they do. I don't. I stay with Smith another game. Now, if they lose and go down 3-1, if you want to make the change just out of desperation, just say, hey, we got to change something. We're facing elimination. Maybe Riddick gives us a bit of a spark. That's fine because you're desperate because now you're facing elimination. But at 2-1 down, I'm not going to panic. I mean, Smith's been the best part of the Flames game here. They can get square through game 4, tie it at 2, and then you get home ice advantage for what in effect becomes a 3-game series. That's what I'm doing. I'm not going to change the goaltender. I think that would be ridiculous. All right, here are the 4 games tonight. It's hard to believe I'm going to say this, but the Tampa Bay Lightning facing elimination, Columbus against the Blue Jackets. And, you know, it's easy to say the Lightning are going to win this game going away because they just can't possibly get swept. All right, I can buy that, but I couldn't imagine they'd be down 3 games to none. I thought game 2 they were an easy bet after they blew the 3-0 lead and the 3-1 lead going into the third period that they would crush the Blue Jackets in Tampa in game 2. Didn't do it. Oh, well, then, of course, they're going to go to Columbus. Remember, Columbus had the 2-0 series lead on Washington, winning both games in D.C. last year, only to squander it away with home ice last season, losing those games in Columbus, eventually losing the series in 6 games. You figure the same thing is going to happen, but then the Blue Jackets win again. I don't know what state Tampa's in right now. I mean, I don't know how they feel about their game. You heard John Cooper say after the game 2 loss that it's a 5-alarm fire. But then after the game 3 loss, he was asked, are you shocked by the situation you're in? Our very own Dan Rosen asked the question from NHL.com. And he's like, I'd rather answer that question after the series. Well, no. The fact is now it's burning to the ground now. And I think that was very revealing by Cooper, where he said 5-alarm fire, figuring his team was going to respond to the comment. Like, hey, it's panic time, guys. We just lost 2 games at home. We're going to go into a hotbed in Columbus. That place is going to be up for grabs. And his team did not respond. Now, I thought they played exceptional in the third period when they're trying to get back into the game. And the Blue Jackets were just holding on for dear life. But they didn't respond to the beginning of that game. So what makes me think they're going to respond to the beginning of this game? There's a sneaking suspicion that maybe this is what Tampa is. Maybe there's a level of acceptance that you're just not good enough to do this. As crazy as that is, as maniac a thought that could possibly be, that a team that won the President's Trophy by 21 points, a team that basically had everything clinched by Christmas, wouldn't be good enough to beat the Columbus Blue Jackets to save their season for 1 game? But I got to base it on how they played in these 3. What, they outscored 13-2 after they took the 3-0 lead after 1 period of play? Where's Stamkos? I mean, Hedman being out is a major concern. Major concern. And you know he wasn't 100% in the first 2 games. So I think the Lightning are in trouble. I don't think anybody could be shocked they get swept. At this particular point, forget about what they did over the regular season. Right now, after losing the first 3 games of this series and not responding, and it's not really anything they can do. You're going to change goal? You're going to blow it up? Usually when a team's down 3-0 and they're looking for a spark, they'll change something. There's nothing to change. What, Kucherov coming back from suspension? Well, he played in the first 2 games. So there's got to be a legitimate concern in Tampa. And even if they found a way to force a game 5, a game 6, even a game 7, are they winning 4 straight? I guess anything's possible, but have more respect for the Blue Jackets than that. They did not get here via fluke. I mean, they've flat out outplayed Tampa at stretches, and they're coming together as a team. And right now, Tampa is in full panic mode that they should have been in after blowing the 3-0 lead in game 1, and they should have been after losing the first 2 games in Tampa and haven't. So will the bell finally ring now that they're facing elimination? Penguins in a similar boat, but again, I'm not going to get crazy because I think the Islanders are better. And Crosby better find a way to score. Malkin better find a way to score. I mean, the Islanders have done a terrific job as a team, as a system, to shut down the studs on Pittsburgh. But it's not like it's about Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. You've got Gensel, you have Kessel, you have Letang. I mean, this team is deep with scoring, but you know what? But the wall that Crosby and Malkin face are the same as everybody else faces, because they all, meaning the Islanders, know their job, know what they need to do, and they play physical. They're playing this Penguins team physical, and the Penguins just do not have a response for it right now. So we'll see if Pittsburgh is going to go quietly into that good night, or whether they're going to put up some sort of a fight. I can't imagine both Pittsburgh and Tampa being eliminated on the same day, but there's a possibility. I think one of the two probably wins, and right now, just based on how the games have gone, maybe Pittsburgh's got a better shot than Tampa, but we'll see. Jets and Blues so far. The road team has won all three games in this series. Jets putting a hurtin' on the St. Louis Blues. Finally, as the Jets played a great offensive game and started getting some shots on goal. So they just needed to step up, and they did, scoring the six goals against St. Louis. We'll see how the kid, Bennington, responds after having a tough night in Game 3. St. Louis is home. If they can break the trend, they take a 3-1 series lead and be in great shape. So we'll see if it holds form with the road team winning again. Sharks and the Golden Knights, I don't know what to think of the Sharks right now. Great Game 1, terrible Games 2 and 3. The Golden Knights seem poised now with a home game of taking that 3-1 series lead. I don't think the Sharks at this stage have the constitution to come back from 3-1 down. I just don't. I want to believe in this team. I want to like this team, but the goaltending has been shabby. The team has been way too inconsistent down the stretch for me to believe that they'd be able to just out of nowhere, in a puff of smoke for the first time after playing like garbage over the last 5 weeks, are going to be able to win three games in a row. Do I think that they can muster what they did in Game 1 to even the series? Sure, I do. But if they lose tonight, they're not winning three in a row. And I think the Golden Knights can sense that. They've been there, done that from last year. Stone is just having an unbelievable run for the Golden Knights. He's been the best player in the postseason so far. So we'll see what the Golden Knights do, but they got an excellent chance to take a 3-1 series lead, and I think that would basically cook the Sharks if that were to happen. All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. Jennifer says, saw Columbus versus Tampa in person. Maybe expectations were high seeing it without a dog in the fight. I love Columbus fans and are hopeful for them this postseason, but I felt like Tampa just didn't look good. If Columbus advances, do you think about them? What do I think about them going forward? Listen, Boston is down 2-1. Pittsburgh is facing elimination. So I mean, right now, if I'm the Columbus Blue Jackets, I'm going to face the Washington Capitals in the next round. If I just beat a team that won the President's Trophy by 21 points, why am I scared of anybody, right? I mean, you're playing with house money, which I think starts to go away as you begin to win series. But still, they're going to be an underdog in every series they play. They're really coming together at the right time. So if you can beat Tampa, who can't you beat? Who can't you beat? I mean, it's so open for them right now what direction this whole thing can go. So when you talk about, you know, where everybody is as far as the playoffs are concerned and who's going to be left once we get there, hey, it just comes down to this now. We know they're going to play the winner of Boston and Toronto. It could end up being Toronto with Toronto up 2-1. Washington can be waiting in the conference final, but maybe it's not going to be Washington because they haven't been able to shake loose a Carolina. Pittsburgh could be gone, so it might be the Islanders they face in the conference final. But again, if it's Boston, if it's Toronto, Washington, Carolina, the Islanders, whoever, Pittsburgh comes back, none of these teams measured up to Tampa over an 82-game schedule. They just beat Tampa. So the sky would be the limit for Columbus. It really would. Be a tremendous story, wouldn't it? I mean, Bobrovsky had to get over the whole hiccup of can't win in the postseason. If they beat Tampa, that's gone. You take a look at their roster, right? Not a ton of experience in the postseason, but enough, right? From the trades that they made. I mean, you look at the Dzingel's a talent. Duchesne's a flat-out talent. We know how good Panarin is. I mean, Seth Jones is one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. I mean, this team did not lack talent. They've got a coach who's been there and done that, winning a cup back in 2004, taking the Rangers to a conference final in 2012. Why not Columbus? Because as we're finding out with Tampa, you can't keep falling back to what happened in the regular season. It's about what's happening now. It's about what's happening in the postseason, not what happened back in October, November, December. So, yeah, those teams established where they are in the standings and having home ice advantage and who eventually they matched up with based on that 82-game schedule. But nobody's going to think about Columbus barely getting into the postseason on the final weekend when if they go out and they beat Tampa in the first round or even sweep them. It'd be ridiculous. Forever TH says, great playoffs so far. Leafs played strong last night. What's your favorite series you've watched so far? There's so many of them because I've really had a lot of fun with Pittsburgh and the Islanders because, you know, being here in New York and wanting that team to advance so we can talk some hockey on the Michael Kay Show. But as far as compelling is concerned, because of the fact that, you know, the Islanders are up 3-0, I'm having a ball watching Calgary and Colorado because I think when you look at the talent on both of those teams and the speeds, a lot of fun. Even though I kind of dissed it a little bit on the podcast yesterday saying it's kind of dragged behind Dallas and Nashville, I've watched a lot of that series. It's been very competitive and a lot of fun. Maybe not the firepower that you see out of Calgary and Colorado, but it's close. Sagan's played well. Ben's played well. Nashville, Forsberg got his first goal of the postseason last night. It's tough to tell because I'm really loving all of these matchups. I really am. Toronto-Boston is exceptionally intriguing because it's an original six matchup and it's a rivalry. It's hard to pinpoint the exact series. That Winnipeg and St. Louis has been a terrific series as well. It's like asking my favorite kid. Chris says, hi, Don. Flyers fans like myself respect AV's accomplishments in Vancouver and New York. However, a lot of fans have concerns over the perception that he favors vets over kids. We went through this with Hackstall. Are their concerns legit, and what can we expect overall from Elaine Vigneault? And I'm glad Chris brought that up because I failed to mention at the beginning of the podcast. Congratulations to Elaine Vigneault. Got to know him when he was the coach of the Rangers. And let's not forget he spent some time in Montreal as well before Vancouver, back in the National Hockey League, getting a chance to coach the Philadelphia Flyers. Montreal aside, he went to the Stanley Cup Final with both Vancouver and New York. So we know what he can do as a coach. Now, the concerns are legitimate about the fact that he seems to favor veterans over kids. But the kids are the ones that are going to get Philadelphia back on track. So that's the difference, okay? He's not taking over a team that's a move away from winning a Stanley Cup. They're still in the infancy of that run. I mean, they've got their young kids, you know, Hart's up here, Sanheim's up here. But a lot of the kids have been playing and this is their future. Okay. So it's about getting the most out of you can out of some of the players that have been here already, you know, whether it's the Van Riemsdyks and the Giroux and the like, but it's really about the young core that's coming up that is going to make this team be great again. So I was kind of curious about the hire because this is not, you know, let's just say for sake of argument, I'm taking like Nashville. You know, Nashville is fed up with Laviolette. Let's say Nashville gets bounced in the first round. Like that would be a destination for AV, right? Try to get more out of a team that's kind of underachieved, that feels like they've got the talent to win a Stanley Cup. They just need the right ingredient in the coach to get them there. But that's not really where Philadelphia is. I don't think Philadelphia is that close to winning a championship. I think they're that close to putting together the pieces. So I think Vigneault is going to have to make some adjustments here. You can't tell me you're going to ride the veterans when it's the kids that are going to lead you there. So I think AV realizes that this might be his last chance at a legitimate contender as a head coach. So I think he'll make the necessary adjustments. But I think he has to read the tea leaves here, Chris, and realize his best chance to go is to ride the kids. Guy says, hey, Don, the playoffs are absolutely must-watch TV with the suspensions handed down by the NHLPS, which I think they got all correct. How does it play in the locker room? Each one seems stupid and selfish and completely avoidable. How do you see it? Well, you know, people can complain about the Kadri suspension, which is for the length of the first round. Okay. It's deserving. I mean, the guy has been nothing but suspendable his entire career. He's a multiple offender. You got to come down on those guys. You do. If it had been a first time offense, maybe he would only get a game or two. But how many games you want to give him considering his history? I think they got it right. You got to go the full bore. I mean, these suspensions that they're handing out, I think you got to do it because it's a free for all out there and the officials are going to miss a lot. Like EJ said yesterday, that they're letting a lot of stuff go because it's just unbelievable how much it's ratcheted up from the regular season and you can't call everything, but some things are going to get missed. So the disciplinary in the National Hockey League has to be severe. Otherwise these guys are going to just go crazy. So I think you got to hand out the suspensions. You got to do the right thing. And I think they got it right with all the suspensions that they had. I mean, Kucherov deserved the game. And Kucherov veers off his path. He sees a prone player and he hit him. That's a suspendable offense. Kadri headhunting with a cross check is a suspendable offense, especially with his history. I think they got it right. Donnell says, hey, Don, love your show. Do you think the Islanders finish off the Penguins tonight and the Blue Jackets finish off the Lightning tonight with sweeps, or the both Penguins and the Lightning force a game five? Again, I feel better about the Penguins than I do the Lightning. I've misread the Lightning for a long time here, but maybe the reason I misread them is because I thought that they were better than they actually were. So I do believe that Pittsburgh's got the better chance to force a game five than Tampa does. Phoenix Jet says, Don, you said yesterday Messier wants to be the Rangers president, also wanted the head coaching job. Has he ever done anything to work his way up? Seems like he has a sense of entitlement that he should get these jobs without paying his dues. Thoughts? I'm not saying you're wrong, because I've said that as far as the head coaching is concerned. If Mark is really committed to being a head coach, you know, go down to the minor leagues, be an assistant someplace, pay your dues, and then get the head coaching job. I'm not really sure how I feel about president, because did John Davidson, who was rumored to be the next president of the Rangers, necessarily pay his dues to be president of the Blues and then the Blue Jackets after he left the Rangers broadcast booth? But he knows hockey. He interviewed well, represented the organization very well, and got the opportunity. Because I think it's a different job. Mark Messier knows hockey. Mark Messier has relationships with people in hockey. His dad was a hockey guy. You know, so I don't necessarily believe that you got to pay your dues as a president. But a head coach, I completely agree with you. And I would say it to Mark. If Mark wants an opportunity to be the head coach of the Rangers or whoever else down the road, there are ways to do it. Look at the avenue John McLean has taken. Kirk Muller is a guy. Rick Tocchet's a guy. All those guys were assistants. They paid their dues someplace and then got their shot. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. But you know what? To just be a great player the way Mark Messier is, say, I want to be a head coach, and then just become a head coach, that's tough to do. I think you need to pay your dues. Casey says, I watched the Hurricanes feed for perspective, and they spoke harshly about the final hit on Svechnikov as he was falling. Didn't think that the final hit was more than Ovi not letting go of his jersey soon enough, but it was still hard to watch. Thought. If you're talking about the fight, if we are talking about the fight, I thought Ovechkin handled himself fine. I didn't think there was any kind of an issue. The problem with this, I was listening to the Hurricanes broadcast driving home, so I didn't get completely catch everything as far as how it went down with the fight. I did hear it, but I got to see the replay. So I hope we're on the same page as far as what we're discussing. And, of course, the radio broadcast is a television broadcast with the Hurricanes with Tripp Tracy and John Forslund. I think we're on the same page. I'm not 100% sure. If I'm not, tweet me tomorrow, and I'll try to get it righted for you. Well, speaking of tomorrow, we'll get a little bit more clarity. We could actually have a couple of teams advancing in the Islanders and the Columbus Blue Jackets, as crazy as that is. So Columbus can advance to the next round. The Islanders can advance to the next round. And the Islanders would have to then wait and see what happens between Washington and Carolina. And, of course, the Blue Jackets would have to wait to see what happens with the Bruins and the Maple Leafs with both of those series 2-1. And I do believe that this is a huge night for the San Jose Sharks. They're not facing elimination, but to me, if they fall 3-1, they're not winning 3 in a row and coming back. Okay. Matter of fact, I would say, and this might just be outlandish, I'm sure a lot of Shark fans will jump me for this, I would have more faith in Pittsburgh and Tampa coming back from 3-0 down than I would San Jose coming back from 3-1 down. Because now I'm starting to believe that the game one was just an aberration. And that they really are a team that's struggling, a team that's a mess, that they were for the final month of the season. And then you don't all of a sudden flip a switch and win 3 in a row against a really good Vegas Golden Knights team with a Stanley Cup caliber goaltender in Marc-Andre Fleury. So that might sound like an outlandish statement, but I don't think the Sharks are coming back from 3-1 down. I'm not even sure they're winning this series if it's even a 2 at this point, but I'd give them a heck of a lot more of an opportunity even a 2 than I would down 3-1. You can always get in touch with me at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Back with you again tomorrow. This was the Tuesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. And worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.